Megan Marshall, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for biography, has long been revered for her narrative skills and deep insights into historical figures. In her new book, After Lives on Biography and the Mysteries of the Human Heart, she takes those skills to her own art and life. In a series of six intertwined pieces, each one a conversation between her own experiences and the broader forces of history, Marshall reinvents the personal essay as a portal to the past with its lessons for living into the future. Again, the name of the book is After Lives. It is published by Mariner, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Megan Marshall to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's really a thrill to have you on the program. What brought you to this particular book at looking at biography as a form?
Well, you know, I had written three big biographies over 30 years' time, and so engaged with them and so pressured by those deadlines that I kept having to extend, that when I came to the end of the third of them, a biography of Elizabeth Bishop, in 2017, I just thought, I can't do this anymore. And I entered a period I think of as after lives, after those lives that I had written. But it was a time when I, you know, was not going to give up the kind of pursuit that I had learned as a biographer. I still wanted to look at some of the loose ends from the biographies that I've written, things that were haunting me. And also I began looking back at my own life, how I had become a biographer, what was and the people in my life who I kind of wanted to give afterlives to them.
You have written biographies on Elizabeth Bishop, as you mentioned, but also Margaret Fuller and the Peabody sisters. Talk a little bit about the decision, and I assume it's a major decision, as to who the subject is going to be and how that's going to work out for you, both as an author and as a biographer, and what you're able to achieve and find out about them as a subject.
Yes, you know, I've been very lucky to have chosen, and I can't say it was always with great forethought, women who have left amazing records in letters and journals, and sometimes interesting objects as well, from which I could tell their lives and really tell about their inner lives, which matters so much in biography. I mean, it's one thing to give a list of what they've done or where they've been or who they knew, but to really know what they were thinking at the time is a great gift. And all of the women I've written about have had that. So the decision had to do, though, to some extent with where I was in my life. My first biography of the Peabody sisters, these were three sisters who were part of the Transcendentalist movement, and one married Horace Mann, one married Nathaniel Hawthorne, and a third didn't marry anyone at all and continued as a leader and a thinker and teacher and writer. And, you know, at that time in my 20s and 30s, and even 40s, as I was working on this book, those were kind of questions in my mind, how to combine marriage, motherhood, the two of the sisters who married each had three children, and also deal with the impulse I still had to be an independent woman, as the third sister was. So it was a very delightful way to be engrossed in the lives of other women who were puzzling over the same questions that haunted me. Margaret Fuller came along at a time when I had been recently divorced. She was a really rebellious member of this transcendental group, great friend of Emerson and Thoreau, and the editor of The Dial. And she went off and left New England to be the front page columnist for the New York Tribune, and then went off to Europe in 1848 during the Year of Revolutions and fell in love and had a child out of wedlock in secret. And then at age 40 came back with a lover and child, and they all drowned in a shipwreck very near Fire Island in a horrible storm. So it was a dramatic life. She was really the first great feminist writer in America and widely known on the other side of the Atlantic, too. And to write about her, you know, gave me a kind of put the wind in my sails at a time when I was flailing a bit in my own life. So I could learn from her. And Elizabeth Bishop had been my professor in poetry classes at Harvard and someone I deeply admired, although we'd actually had a kind of run-in that I write about in the book. So that was an experiment with form, writing about someone that I knew and someone I admired, but someone with whom I'd had some difficulty. And I think that book, I'm very proud of it. It's called Elizabeth Bishop, A Miracle for Breakfast. It kind of combines biography with my own memoir of that period during which I knew her, like my college years. And it kind of led me towards this book, After Lives, where I was looking at such things as, you know, what had become of Sophia Peabody Hawthorne and Nathaniel Hawthorne's daughter, Una, who died at age 33, rather mysteriously. There's an essay about that, actually, the title essay called After Lives. It begins from when I had this very strange opportunity, I guess you could call it, which a biographer's dream, the remains of Sophia Peabody and her daughter Una were being transferred from London to Sleepy Hollow Cemetery in Concord, Massachusetts. And I was invited to look inside the casket. So I'm not going to tell you what I found, but that's in that essay.
No, I was going to ask you about that because it is fascinating. I won't give anything away, but you do come from that, a realization about this and learn even more about the subject from that experience.
Yes, that's very true. You never stop trying to find out about these people who've been really your companions, your intellectual, spiritual, just companionable companions for decades in the case of the Peabody sisters. You never stop caring. And that's a big message of this book, the afterlives of your subjects in your own life. I'm about to head off to the Mass Historical Society and look at some letters of Una's that I hadn't known were there. That's the Hawthorne's daughter, Una. See if I can find out some more. But the mystery really came down to the element of hair. Was her hair red when she died? Was her hair white when she died, as everybody reported? And you'll hear what I found out about, or you'll find out what I found out about that if you read the essay. So, and the Peabody sisters, really, I had kind of grown up as a biographer with them. I had spent a lot of time, as I said, reading their letters and journals. But in the afterlife of the Peabody sisters, I began thinking also about the objects of their lives. And that's another of the essays called These Useless Things, about, you know, what are things in our lives that we just use every day, we don't think so much about, but they end up being able to tell stories about us. And again, I don't want to reveal everything about that essay, but I did manage to end up with the writing desk of the Elizabeth and Mary Peabody that their students had given them as a gift. I'd read about that in letters. I'm not going to tell you how I ended up with it in my own studio study writing. It's this little writing desk. It's a portable thing, looks like a box, just a little box, but that held their pens and papers, and you could open it up just the way we open up our laptop computers and write away. That's what they were doing with it, and it's dated 1827, and here I have it in 2025 looking down on me as I write.
In looking at the subjects, I think, obviously, and you touched on this earlier, but Elizabeth Bishop, that is a different experience because it's someone that you know. And then as far as the Peabody sisters, it's really a group biography. And so those are all different experiences. I assume that they do all pose different challenges.
They do. You know, I think every book gives its own structure. The Peabody sisters, I was interested in their early adult lives with the Transcendentalists and the way they made these marriages, how the men factored into their lives. And I really confined that book to their that period of intellectual and spiritual and emotional growth and renaissance in their lives. So it's kind of it's framed by the two weddings. So it has that structure. The Margaret Fuller biography is in some ways more conventional, but I wrote it so it would read like a novel. And I think it really does that, as if you're following her through her life. And I explained it with Elizabeth Bishop. It was kind of mashup of biography and autobiography. But I think, you know, I set a lot of store in something that I read by an early biographer, Gamaliel Bradford, who said that we're all biographers from childhood. We're always looking at the lives of those around us in order to compare ourselves and to learn from them and to find out what we don't want to do or do want to do, what we might be able to do. We're all biographers from childhood. And that led me to looking at the people who were significant in my own life. So there's one essay about my growing up in Pasadena, California, and my high school classmate, Jonathan Jackson, the younger brother of George Jackson, the Soledad brother, who lost his life tragically at 17, just before our senior year, in the case that put Angela Davis on the FBI's most wanted list. He thought he was going to be able to rescue his brother or get his brother sprung from prison, where he'd been on one of those crazy sort of 1 year to life endless sentences, and by taking hostages in a Marin County courthouse. And of course, it did not work out. But that, you know, act of Jonathan's, someone I had known, he was in my classes, really was a very transformational experience. It was a tragic and transformational experience, I think, for all of us who knew him. We suddenly understood ourselves as people who were living in history and living history. And it, I think, put me in kind of the frame of mind to be someone to look at the world as a place I might be able to connect with and to ultimately to write about. I did give a speech about him in this context of this was 1970 and 71. You know, it was a very different era. Our classmate had been killed, but did anyone care about how we felt about it? No, they thought he was a dangerous example to us, and I felt he should be remembered, and ended up giving the speech, which they tried to prevent me from giving. And so, I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but that moment of trying to say something, trying to remember somebody who mattered so much to us, we didn't want him forgotten, I think was a beginning of my work in biography.
The subtitle of the book is On Biography and the Mysteries of the Human Heart. Besides the things that you have omitted from telling us through the course of this interview, what do you mean by that phrase of the mysteries of the human heart?
I think that's a really good question. There's a lot that we just can't know, and some of these essays do end on that note, but I think not in a frustrating way. I think this is what we're doing in life. We're always puzzling over what, you know, what does it mean? How did we end up where we did? And there's usually no one answer. And sifting through the possibilities is really the most useful way to think about this. So, you know, was Jonathan Jackson a hero? Was he a martyr? Was he put up to this by his older brother and Angela Davis? We can't really know, but we can look at his words and we can think about what he might mean to us and what we might learn from his life. And I think that's as close as we can get. It remains a mystery, but that doesn't mean it's not meaningful.
You mentioned earlier that you were going to be going and looking at letters that you have access to that you had not had access to prior. Is that curiosity that brings you there?
Oh, yes. You know, it's a kind of detective. The work of the biographer is very much a detective work. And it's thrilling, really. You never know what you're going to find. And I've been lucky to have subjects who write just glorious letters. Una is among them. I've seen letters that are boring, too, you can imagine, but that doesn't seem to be the case for the subjects I've been writing about. And just piecing things together, it's a thrill of the chase.
The name of the book is After Lives, On Biography and the Mysteries of the Human Heart. It is published by Mariner. Megan Marshall, a great pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you, Joe.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is After Lives, on biography and the mysteries of the human heart. The book is published by Mariner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.